Welcome to the Erwin Mitchell podcast. This series focuses on our consumer sector group, and today our focus is on wedding venues and the coronavirus. Today we're going to cover illegality, force majeure, frustration, consumer rights, negotiation, and the importance of insurance. On today's episode is me, Catherine East. I'm a solicitor specialising in commercial dispute resolution, and with me today I have John Dunn, a trainee in our department. John, thank you very much for joining me.
Thanks for having me.
John is actually due to have a wedding in June of this year. And now, before we come on to what this means for you, John, you have been doing a bit of research into how big the wedding industry is so that we can really have an idea of the statistics and sort of the magnitude of the industry, haven't you?
Yeah, so we've looked at the Office of National Statistics, and based on their data, we estimate that around 250,000 weddings are due to take place this year in the peak season around April to September. So COVID-19 could potentially affect at least 150,000 couples intending to wed over the summer during these months. Weddings are big business, and for venues and couples are facing a great deal of uncertainty at the moment.
Wow, so with a wedding in June, what is happening with your wedding right now?
Yeah, so I was due to get married on the 27th of June, and at the moment, on the 25th of March, the government introduced the Coronavirus Act 2020. On the 26th of March, the Secretary of State made a number of public declarations and introduced the Health Protection Coronavirus Restrictions England Regulations 2020. Quite a mouthful. Section 7 of that restricts gatherings of more than two people in a public place, except members of the same household, gatherings that are essential for work, to attend a funeral, or when reasonably necessary, such as to provide care or emergency assistance.
Okay, so unfortunately, John, you fall into the category of the medium to long-term weddings that we're looking at.
Yeah, so now we've been looking at the terms and conditions and the contract that we've signed up to with the venue. We're looking at the particular clauses that might be of interest or might be of assistance to us. One clause in particular, which I know has been talked about a lot recently, is the force majeure clause. What would you advise in relation to that, Catherine?
Yeah, so force majeure clauses, until fairly recently, a lot of people will look at them just as boilerplate clauses. And if anything out of this process, I hope that people do start to look at them with a little bit more due care and attention, because you can't always predict what is going to happen. And that is what these clauses are meant to protect based on. So kind of having an idea of all the things you might not have thought of yet and trying to make provision for them. So the first thing to know about force majeure clauses is that they are entirely a construct of contract. So if there isn't a force majeure clause in your contract, force majeure doesn't apply. It isn't going to be implied by law, and the court isn't going to create one for you. If you do have a force majeure clause, great. But as it is entirely a construct of contract, it does entirely depend on what it says. And it will cover a number of different examples which will relieve parties of certain obligations on specified events. Now, ones that we see quite often are things like acts of God, war, civil unrest, infectious diseases might be in there, pandemics might be in there, government intervention might be in there. But you do need to look at what the clause actually says and what it says happens once that clause has been invoked. So if government action is in there, but pandemics isn't, it could be that government action means that the venue doesn't have to provide a refund. Or if it could be that if there is a pandemic, the venue does have to provide a refund. So you really have to look at the wording of the contract. And then I guess a relevant question for you, John, is actually who's going to rely on that clause? Who's going to invoke it? Like I said, it could be the venue or the couple.
Yeah, I see. So in our case, we might argue if the clause is drafted in our favour, that we can use it as a sword to essentially argue that we are entitled to either a refund or an appropriate postponement for alternative dates of our choosing. Or if it's not drafted in our favour, The venue might use it as, in some way, a shield to defend themselves from any claim we make, to request a refund or to agree a postponement on our terms. And they may argue that a postponement is only available on their terms, or seek to withhold a return of the deposit in those cases.
Yeah, definitely. And like I said, the clause should explain what happens once it's invoked. And a relevant consideration for you and the venue is, well, if it just terminates the contract, is that actually what either party wants? I presume you and your fiancé spent a lot of time deciding which venue you were going to go with.
We certainly did, yeah. We spent the best part of 6 months trying to find the perfect venue, and now we finally found it. And we would like to, say, maintain relationships with them and, if possible, use them.
And it will be the same from the venue's perspective. I imagine they spent a lot of time marketing, management time, getting you through the door, getting you signed up. And if it is a case that it totally terminates the contract, is that actually what either party wants? And also, if you invoke a force majeure clause, you know, it can come down to interpretation, and ultimately it could end up in the courts. And litigation is expensive. Do you want to get it that far? There's a lot of considerations that you and the venue should be having before thinking of relying on these clauses. And as I said, at the moment, we don't have any case law on how this is going to work out in the terms of coronavirus. So it is quite an uncertain place to be litigating.
Thank you, Catherine. That's really helpful. As we're in unprecedented times and COVID-19 is completely unexpected, in the event where we're reviewing the contract terms and the terms don't provide for these circumstances and they don't assist either party, what other arguments could be looked at to assist in these circumstances?
Yeah, so there are a few things. You could have a look at the doctrine of frustration.
It's very frustrating booking a wedding venue in these circumstances, I can tell you.
I can't even imagine. But unfortunately, the doctrine of frustration is slightly narrower than how we would use it in everyday language. Frustration applies if a contract is impossible or illegal to perform. It's separate to force majeure, and it is implied by law. But it isn't enough that it simply becomes difficult for the contract to be performed. So, for example, if it becomes more expensive for a venue to supply all the food for the wedding, and the venue argues that it's practically unviable for them to do it any longer, that isn't enough. So for the doctrine of frustration to apply, it has to be illegal or impossible.
So essentially, financial hardship on the side of the venue isn't sufficient to support a claim for frustration.
No, it's not. And similar questions will apply when you're thinking about frustration as will when you're thinking about force majeure. So the effect is that the contract ends again. Is that really what either party wants? Is there a better middle ground? It's sort of those same considerations. The other possibility that you could look at is what rights you have under the Consumer Rights Act.
So we've been looking at some of the provisions under the Consumer Rights Act, and I understand that this comes from the Consumer Rights Act 2015 that we're talking about here, which is a relatively new act, but I understand that it contains mainly old rights that have already existed.
Yeah, so the Consumer Rights Act consolidated quite a number of old laws. It is very consumer-centric. The whole point of it is that businesses are assumed to have more bargaining power than individuals, and they can take more expensive legal advice and things like that. So the Consumer Rights Act gives consumers those rights that the consumers might not have thought about or might not have had the position to contract on when they entered into these contracts. So it implies terms into all contracts between businesses and consumers, which are for the sale or supply of goods or services, and they can't be contracted out of. So you cannot put in your terms and conditions you don't have any of these rights or the Consumer Rights Act doesn't apply, those terms in your contract would just be void.
And how would this likely affect the parties who are working in terms of looking to postpone the wedding to a different date?
There's a number of these implied terms, and they are things that probably are quite common sense if you think about them. So it's things like the services have to be supplied with reasonable care and skill. And if you are selling with a sample, the goods have to meet that sample. So it's things like that. They are quite common sense. There's one in there that if you are supplying a service, it has to be supplied within a reasonable time frame. Now, if the contract sets the time frame, then that's the end of it. And again, as we said earlier, we don't know how this is all going to be interpreted by the courts at this stage. It is totally unprecedented, but it is something to start thinking about. You know, if your contract provides for it to take place on a certain date, it can't take place on that date for whatever reason, and you're trying to postpone it, if there is a clause in there that allows the venue to postpone, then when is it going to be postponed to? Is it reasonable for you to say, well, we've got all of our 2021 bookings already made, so you're going to have to look at 2022, 2023. Is that a reasonable time frame? I don't know. I can't give you the answer to that, but it is a relevant consideration and something that you have to start thinking about at this stage before either party takes too hard a stance on anything.
I understand that the consumer rights is obviously looking at the principle of fairness and bargaining power between the parties and whether it's fair to allow contractual terms between the parties to be upheld in a consumer context on that basis. So on the subject of fairness, one big question seems to be whether if we choose to cancel as a couple, can the venue then hold on to our deposits?
Yeah, so that could be an example of an unfair term. So even if you have a clause in your contract, the Consumer Rights Act can step in and say that that is an unfair term. So venues need to be thinking about whether or not they can mitigate their losses in any way. Because if they can, and the value of the deposit is actually higher than it's the venue's actual losses, it could be that even if the contract says that the venue can hold on to the deposit in the event of a cancellation, the Consumer Rights Act could step in and say that in the circumstances, it'd be unfair for the venue to hold on to the entire deposit and some of all of it, or all of it, should be returned to the couple. Unfortunately, we just don't know how this is going to play out at the moment. These issues have never been tested in court, but it isn't always enough for a business to rely on their own terms. The Consumer Rights Act is very, very favourable to consumers and therefore the couple. And we have seen recently that the Competition and Markets Authority has come out and said in a number of industries, they don't think businesses are acting reasonably and they are considering taking action against businesses in those industries. And one of those was the wedding venue industry. So if couples aren't being offered a refund, these companies could face action, not just from the couples, but also from the CMA. So it is something that venues really need to be alive to.
So looking at other alternatives to recovering the funds, if in the event that venues aren't able to recover their deposits, and also for couples as well, is potentially looking at insurance on both sides. We actually hold an insurance policy for our wedding, but I was surprised to read that it's been reported that only 30% of couples actually have some form of wedding insurance.
Wow, yeah, that is low. Venues may also hold business interruption insurance policies. So ideally, both sides would be insured, but hopefully at least the venues are. But yeah, I agree with you. The insurance policy should be the first port of call. Both parties should contact their insurance provider before considering taking any of the action we've talked about today. Because taking that action, whether that be to amend the original terms of the contract, to invoke any of the force majeure clauses or anything like that, in taking that action without speaking to your insurance provider first, you could run the risk of invalidating your insurance policy. So that's definitely the first action to take before you do anything else, speak to your insurer.
So if as part of these measures we've actually spoken to the insurance provider already, and had a discussion with them about the policy and the details of the policy, what would you recommend the next step would be?
The next thing I would say is seek to negotiate between the parties. Obviously, we've been saying throughout this, all of these legal remedies and contractual remedies available to the parties come with a degree of uncertainty at this point. And litigation is expensive, as we've said, and there's always an element of litigation risk. It's time consuming, and as much as we try for our clients to make it a seamless process, it is always going to be stressful. Now, it's always better, you know, remedy is always better than cure. If you can have those conversations early, try and seek a compromise between the parties, that would be better than waiting until after the event or, you know, once a full dispute has already arisen and then trying to have recourse to the courts. So, number one, speak to your insurance provider. Number two, speak to the other side, whether you're the venue speaking to the couple or the couple trying to speak to the venue, and seek to negotiate. At the moment, there is a huge amount of goodwill in the world, and everyone's looking for acts of kindness from each other. That might not last forever. And there is a huge risk for venues to reputational damage at this point. So always try and seek to mutually agree a compromise, which might fall outside of the original terms of the contract. You know, if you want to speak to us, we can talk to you about that. And you know, we call ourselves commercial dispute resolution because we don't just do litigation. We help parties negotiate in the pre-action stages, and we can try, and hopefully you can try between yourselves to reach a compromise that suits the circumstances of the case.
Okay, so some really helpful tips there to take things forward. So the first thing we should be looking at is consult the insurance policy documents we have and contact the insurance provider to see if any action needed with regards to the policy, or to avoid any action being taken which might invalidate the policy at a later stage. Secondly, then, to start speaking to the other side as early as possible to get their position on things. It may be fairly simple to agree a position that suits both parties without resorting to a direct legal challenge. For example, if alternative dates are made available to the couple by the venue, it may be that a simple postponement of the wedding is satisfactory for both parties, leaving the couple. What you don't want to do is leave a couple without a venue, or a venue with a vacant peak time wedding slot and no funds to fill that. And then finally, parties might look at legal remedies depending on the factors specific to their circumstances, such as the wording in the contract and the terms themselves, and the conduct of the parties leading up to the dispute, and the date the couple is due to get married. For this reason, specific legal advice will be required if the venue or couple are thinking of pursuing an action, and discussed in this podcast.
Well, I think that just about wraps it up nicely. Thank you for joining me today, John, and thank you to our listeners for joining us both. This has been an Erwin Mitchell podcast focusing on our consumer sector group. Please do visit our website and social media posts, including LinkedIn and Twitter, where we provide updates on future podcasts and webinars, as well as articles offering insights, which will hopefully assist you and your business.